Since the 1960s, One Force has always been there for cargo.
Hey, man, get in the chopper, man.
Well, you know, where are we going?
We gotta drop off some cargo, man, for the little money, man.
Anywhere, any place, anytime, they'll be there.
Welcome to Phantom Podcast Network. This is Legal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of 1980s action cinema. Celebrating the heroes of yesterday, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Bruce Willis, Van Damme, all the way down to, of course, the big great action films that we all enjoyed on VHS, and of course, Betamax, with the loves of American Ninja, all the way through to Cyborg Cop and beyond. Here at Phantom Podcast Network's Legal Mullet Podcast, join Adam O'Brien as we celebrate action movie cinema.
G'day, mate, how you going? Welcome to the one that you know, the Legal Mullet Podcast, coming to you from the radio waves, of course, Phantom Podcast Network. Joining us also on this fantastic occasion, looking at the film Air America, the amazing Mel Gibson and Robert Downey Jr. Airfest, is, of course, the amazing, award-winning editor of many podcasts on this network, also the co-owner of Phantom Podcast Network, and a fair hand when it comes to all movie trivia and more. And, believe it or not, he loves anime too, folks. Stay tuned to this channel because I'm sure he has an anime podcast in mind very, very soon here on the network. That is one, the only, the everlasting, Carl Wagner!
There you go, mate.
Excuse me, is that an Uzi?
And of course, answered later on by Tim Thomason.
Yeah, I think that's an Uzi, man.
Hey, how you doing, pal?
I am doing well. I'm here to talk a little Air America. Interesting film. I've had an interesting time.
That's right. And believe it or not, based on fact, when it comes to the CIA, they were running top secret ops into Laos, over Vietnam, in and around when it came to, let's just say, secret armaments going out, secret other shipments, which we'll talk about very, very soon. And of course, this is about the corrupt part of it. Obviously, Air America was also, a legit part too. So there's some really, really interesting real-life parts to this story. But 1990, great time to have Mel Gibson and, of course, Robert Downey Jr. together, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. This was Robert Downey Jr. right before he really kind of went downhill there in the 90s. And this is Mel Gibson kind of coming down from his peak, but still being very much Mel Gibson at this point.
Oh, without a doubt. Look, I think that, you know, the big thing is that Mel in particular was, you know, Lethal Weapon 1, Lethal Weapon 2 at this stage. I don't think he'd done the third one, was that right, by this stage? I can't remember. I think it was a couple of years later, I think.
Blasphemer! Blasphemy!
I try to forget about Lethal Weapon 3 and 4.
Blasphemy!
And obviously, you know, Robert Downey Jr. coming up there with, some great teen hits. Obviously, Less Than Zero and, some huge films as he was sort of building up his repertoire, you could say. And this is probably from that period, for me, his best film.
Robert Downey Jr., this is where things get very interesting with Robert Downey Jr.'s career, because when you go back and look at it, I mean, Downey Jr. has been up and down, but you go back to the 1990s, he had a lot of good stuff after Air America. He did U.S. Marshals. He was doing a lot of things, and he had some really good stuff right before Air America as well. He had done Chaplin, which he got rave reviews as for his portrayal of Charlie Chaplin. This was kind of Air America. Truthfully, I think Air America was his first kind of, let's get a little bit more serious film. It had some comedy, but it had some seriousness to it.
Oh, without a doubt. And I think the other thing, too, you had an interesting time for Mel outside of his big franchise pictures. He had Forever Young, where he's really starting to stretch his acting ability, I think. Still comedy with things like Bird on a Wire. We obviously, a few years later, had Maverick. So, you know, really different stuff. And, of course, Man Without a Face. which I think was one of these more interesting non-action roles, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I want to go back to Downey real quick, because this is, like I said, 1990, and then shortly after this, because he did Chaplin in 92, and shortly after that, he started having some of his problems, because he kind of slowed down significantly, kind of rebounded a little bit with doing U.S. Marshals in 1998. He was doing a lot of stuff, but not really anything huge. And then he kind of made a little bit of a comeback with Ally McBeal after his first go-round with problems, and unfortunately had some more problems there afterwards, and was really kind of low on the radar. You can throw Zodiac in there as far, and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang as movies. And then he kind of had a little trouble again, but then hit big in 2007 with Charlie Bartlett. A lot of people loved him in that. And then, of course, right after that was the movie that changed everything for him, Iron Man.
Yeah, I think he's had a couple of tastes of it, you know, like a little bit here, a little bit there, has a bit of a dip, comes back up. So, you know, I think the thing is that always saved him, no matter where he was in that sort of, you know, I suppose wave of success, was that the fact that the boy had talent. You know, he really has an amazing ability to capture character no matter where he's at. Obviously also had Nancy Travis, who I probably remember more from before this, Three Men and a Baby. We also have Ken Jenkins. Now, Ken's great because we know him from, obviously, The Stand, playing the father who succumbs to the disease, to Captain Trips. And he's also a great marshal at the end of The Last Man Standing with Bruce Willis. But just an all-round great character actor.
Yeah, very much so. This was a lot of character actors in this film. You had your three stars, but almost everybody else was a very well-known character actor, and you had one ultimate B-movie star in this, too.
Oh, yeah, and we're going to get into that very, very soon, folks. We'll hold that for the casting. We're going to get into that soon. But before we do that, we're going to have a bit of a chat about where you can find this show and many others like it on the Phantom Podcast Network. You can catch this show, you can catch Culture Clash, Blood of Kings, Type 40, What a Piece of Junk of Star Wars podcast, and of course, Making Trek's Star Trek podcast, all on the Phantom Podcast Network at the Masterfeed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can catch it at Google Play, Apple Podcasts. You can catch it also on Stitcher Radio, and of course, now on iHeartRadio. You can catch me at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and definitely join the Facebook page there where we chat little bits of trivia, different movies, and I'll also take requests of stuff that we can look at from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s there in action movie circles and retro. And of course, you can also find Phantom Podcast Network also on at FanPod Network on Twitter. You can also catch it with Phantom Podcast Network on Facebook and Instagram as well. All the shows are laid out there too if you want to find out the feed from there. And also definitely check out Kyle's social place. Where do you find you, buddy?
You can find me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. And of course, you can find me all over the place at the Phantom Podcast Network too.
That's right. Go and check them out, folks. And definitely get involved. Contact us. Let us know what you'd like us to chat about on these different shows.
Hey, man. I'm here talking to Roadkill Rick, man. Hey, man. How you doing, man? Hey, man. Are you there, man? In Virginia, man. Man?
In Virginia, I sure is there, brother.
Are you the brother from another mother of the year, man, mother?
That's right. I'm a real nice man.
I heard you was a cowboy, yeah, man.
I ain't no cowboy, brother.
Are you still eating that rhinoceros on the side of the road, in and out of the side of a, what is it? It looks like a brush fire.
Oh, I love my Carmack shooting.
Well, you're using gunpowder to fire up that little forest fire so you can put on that, man?
Yeah, man. I like to open up a cartridge and just pour some into the aluminum pump cap, and it sparks off a light treat and gives it a light crispy color.
Hey, man, that's pretty cool, man. You should make like a cookbook, man.
Oh, yeah, man.
There's definitely some interesting stuff there. Obviously, we've been covering a lot of 007 over the last couple of weeks. We've got another one that's a little bit delayed coming out, which is a look at the Daniel Craig era. And of course, Lee Fillingsness joined us and he said,
"Hey, Adam, can I chat guns on your podcast?"
I said, "Yeah, you can."
"Guns and bayonets?"
I said, "Yeah, of course you can."
And knives?"
I said, "Yeah, and knives as well. Yeah, yeah."
"And landmines?"
"Yeah, yeah, we can talk about that too." And of course, Kyle joined us on that one too.
Yes, well, you know, we like things that explode.
We certainly do. Now, one of the great things about 007 is that we've looked at each of the eras, but I think fair to say that it's a fashion or it's a, I suppose, a love of whatever you like about, you know, action and spy films. And I think each person has their favorite.
Yeah, no, I think they do too. I think that's the nice thing about that genre is that you, there's not really a wrong answer. Because everybody has their favorite, and I think especially with that you can't go wrong.
No, 100%, definitely can't go wrong. And I think that's the big thing at the end of the day is finding that right feel for whatever is up here. Now, obviously, Daniel Craig's your favorite. Who do you think should be the next Bond?
That's a tough question. I'm almost to the point where It's either, and I can't think of his name at the moment, so you have to forgive me, but he played Robb Stark on Game of Thrones. He was also in the BBC show The Bodyguard.
Oh, well, actually, I have somebody here that might be able to answer that for you. Oh, come in. Oh, Mr. Hadley. Yeah. "Hey, mate, how you doing? This is Dan Hadley, and I'd like to tell you that his name is Richard Madden."
That's right, Richard Madden.
Thanks, Dan.
I think he might be a good Bond. I'd like to see him get a little bit of chance at a bigger role. It's either that, or I would like to see them go with a complete unknown. And really surprise, give somebody new a chance. Because to be honest with you, there's not too many current actors I can really think of in that James Bond role.
No, that's right. That's right. Oh, somebody else is here to tell us what they think or who should be playing James Bond. Oh, Kevin, you're here.
"Hey, man, how you doing, man? I think Keanu Reeves, man, should be Bond. Hey, man, hey, Kyle, can you make sure you edit that into the podcast, please?"
I don't then know. See, Kevin is quite happy with Keanu Reeves as John Wick, and it's all good.
So I think it just needs to go to a complete unknown myself. I think we need fresh blood in there, whether it's a TV actor or even just get somebody that we've never seen before, because I think it needs to be the Bond itself needs to be the spectacle, not so much the person.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm going to be interested to see where they take it after Craig. Obviously, we have No Time to Die coming, hopefully later this year. That's the hope at any rate. But I'm really looking forward to that one. I'm a big Rami Malek fan as well. I've loved him since before when he did Night at the Museum. But if you have not watched Mr. Robot, that is a masterpiece of a television show.
Oh, it's a great show, actually, isn't it?
Oh, very, very much so, and a little different, but Rami Malek is amazing in it, and I was very happy to see him win the Oscar a couple years ago for Bohemian Rhapsody.
And he enjoyed working out here in Australia for the Pacific.
Yeah.
Very good in that. Folks, we are going to get into, obviously, Air America in a sec, but one thing, go and check out the latest episode of the Australian Empire magazine, which I don't know if it's going to be in your neck of the woods, Kyle, Empire Film. It's from the UK, so you might get it super released from news agencies or grocers, depending on where you are. But this new issue has the first official footage in print of Dune. Of course, Denis Villeneuve is finally releasing some combat footage of Dune, and we're seeing Paul Atreides in the fighting room with Josh Brolin, blades drawn, or Kinjal blades, ready, and of course, it's the first person to draw blood that wins the little contest. Kind of, it looks like a Jedi temple room.
But what Adam O'Brien is not telling everybody is he is trying to still find a way to find quality property on Arrakis.
And I'll pay through the nose for it, who knows. But it's interesting, the actual footage shows a shield on, or at least an activator on the left side of his hand, so it looks like they must activate it and then it goes around their body after that.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see. I've actually tried to stay away from some of the pictures of late because I really at this point want to see a trailer. A trailer is the next step. We need to see one. I know things are a little strange, but I got to think when theaters start reopening, if everything goes, at least here in the States, what they're talking about is in July with the new Christopher Nolan movie Tenet opening, kind of opening up theaters. Yes. I think that they've got to have a trailer for Dune by then. Give us something.
Yeah, and of course, Snyder Cut on the way now with HBO Max.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. HBO Max launches here in the States in about a week. I know that the Dune show is not planned until 2021, from my understanding of it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, speaking of which, HBO Max had some interesting news today as they announced they're going to be releasing the Snyder Cut of Justice League on HBO Max.
Which is huge, huge. And I think the thing is, we're finally going to get to see his rounded vision of what he wanted out of that sort of trio of films that he put together.
Yeah, you know, I mean, here's the thing with Snyder. I think the man knows visuals like the back of his hand. He does some amazing things. I just mm-hmm. don't know if he knows how to get out of his own way, but I'm also willing to give him a slide. Obviously, we know the personal tragedies he went through, and that's why he had to leave the Justice mm-hmm. League project. Josh Whedon kind of took over and rewrote a lot of things Snyder had planned. I think it's fine that his thing is getting out, but I think at this point, the Warner Brothers DC Universe plan is so off track that they're still trying to find the proper direction for everything.
Yeah, and it's going to be a hard thing. It's not something that's going to happen straight away. Like, it's going to take time. And I think that's, you know, in the end of it, how things are going to build up eventually.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and the thing is, I think we've got a group of, you know, people now involved in DC, which we're going to see some real amazing stuff.
Well, I mean, obviously Aquaman is amazing and Wonder Woman is amazing. I think those two characters are kind of the two characters are going to find a way to fold into whatever direction they go in going forward. Mm-hmm. I would still like to see Henry Cavill get one more Superman film, because I really think he was starting to get a feel for Superman at the end of Justice League.
And he's great. I think he's fantastic. He might not be Christopher Reeve. He might not be everyone's take, but he looks damn good in the suit.
Yeah, and I thought he was kind of, like I said, I thought he was starting to get a feel for Superman at the end of Justice League. I would know this, Ezra Miller will be the Flash.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, yeah. That was a great little race, that. I mean, you know, they're sort of like, who's going to win? Who's going to win? And you know it's Superman. Like, he's, you know, he's the be-all, end-all. But what's fun about it is the comedic and character poets were all together there finally. I think, you know, maybe, you know, that's what it needed. That, you know, and no doubt, maybe that was part of Whedon's introduction to it.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, we have Matt Reeves' Batman coming up on the DC side with Pattinson as Batman. I am intrigued by this because I really do believe he's intending to go with a lot more of the detective side of Batman than the action side of Batman. Mm-hmm. So I'm intrigued by this. I like Matt Reeves. Pattinson's actually a better actor than a lot of people give him credit for, because so many people just base him off the Twilight movies, and I think that's an unfair mm-hmm. comparison. It's not like he's not like Kristen Stewart, where he only has one range of emotion that he does on every role.
Yeah. Oh no, 100%. I think there's definitely something there. I mean, look, you've got some great, you've got Jason Momoa, you've got, a wonderful, wonderful, Wonder Woman. There you go. Wonderful, wonderful. She's fantastic. And just Eve Cyborg's great too. These are characters I never thought I would enjoy, or even Aquaman on screen. But there's a camaraderie there, and they have fun.
Yeah, I think the two big things for DC right now are they've got to figure out who's going to play the Flash, because I don't think Ezra Miller is going to be back. And if you don't know what we're talking about, go look him up on YouTube, and you'll understand why.
What can you say about Ezra Miller is that you know, he's a number of times, I suppose, been a bit, what would you say, not hostile. Hostile is not the word, but definitely a bit aggravated.
He crossed a line in that video that's out. I don't care what they say about it. There was a line crossed. He needs to take a few lessons of how to deal with the fans from Tom Holland.
Yeah, definitely. And that was, I mean, I'm talking about prior to, obviously, that he, you know, he's definitely somebody that's energetic or whatever you want to call it, but that's way over the line.
Yeah. The other thing they got to do is they've got to get Green Lantern right, because you cannot have a full Justice League without
Nathan Fillion in there.
So I'm going to just get heck right now, because my Green Lantern is Kyle Rayner.
He's cool. You had to say it because it's Kyle. You had to say it because it's Kyle.
Well, that's some part of it, but I mean, I really started picking up and reading Green Lantern on a regular basis at the end of the Emerald Twilight series when Hal Jordan first went bad and went parallax and they made Kyle Rayner the Green Lantern. And I love the way, especially how Grant Morrison wrote that character in his version of the Justice
League. And I'm waiting for the Charles Band version of Green Lantern where we have Art LaFleur as Sinestro and Tim Thomason as, of course, the one, the only, the great Hal Jordan.
Yeah, no. Let's talk about a movie that both of those actors were actually in, though, because that's what we're here to talk about.
Folks. Yeah, we're definitely going to be delving in that very, very soon, too. But I want to say a big thanks to our listeners for giving us some feedback on, and a lot of it is just people writing in through, obviously, the Facebook page now, letting us know, hey, look, thank you for looking at Bond. We had about 5 messages to do with covering the Australian Bond, actually, surprisingly enough, wanting to know a little bit more about George Lazenby. So in a couple of weeks, I will look at On Her Majesty's Secret Service. But what I want to do is have a look at it from the novel's perspective as well as the movie. Because what's funny is fans don't really like that movie, but filmmakers do, believe it or not. And I think that's what's interesting about that film. Nolan loves it. Mendez loved it. So it's all these people that you wouldn't expect loving that property.
Yeah, you know, I think for me, it's a very slow Bond of a film.
It is, without a doubt. It's a slow one. You know, we just see how it goes. But
it's time to head into the pub. Here we go.
Anyway, we're here to chat about, of course, the one, the only Mel Gibson. Era America. This film came out in 1990, directed by, of course, Roger Spottiswoode, award-winning director, written by Christopher Robbins and 2 other writers, and, of course, starring the one, the only, Mel Gibson and his dear pal in crime, the one, the only, Robert Downey Jr. This is a film about the Vietnam War and, of course, the, let's say, illegal raids in and over Laos by the Air America. Of course, this is a civilian-run operation, but tone lines with the CIA as well, covert into. When did you first see this one?
I actually saw this in the theaters with my parents, of all things. They were huge Mel Gibson fans and were very intrigued by the time frame and everything like that. So they went to see it, and I went with them. I was looking forward to the team up of Robert Downey Jr. and Mel Gibson.
Great team up! I mean, the two of them really, are bang on perfect when it comes to the roles that they play. Obviously Mel Gibson playing Gene, the sort of experienced guy behind the scenes, and Billy, the up-and-coming guy who used to be a pilot for the radio stations in the US.
Yeah, and that was a great introduction to the character of Billy in the beginning of the film when he's doing the traffic report in the helicopter and you've got an accident or something, somebody's being a real jerk, and there's a woman who an ambulance trying to get through, and so he flies his copter and makes a confrontation, like, with it, and he's flying his copter. The pilot who is actually flying the helicopter is one hell of a pilot, because he was, like, within just a few feet of that vehicle in the film, so.
And the truck driver of that truck is Ernie Lively, who's actually the head of, in Passenger 57, the police running the airport where the plane comes down. He goes, "Who's this guy coming down here?" You know, he's a real cowboy. So it kind of fits that part quite well. And he gets all fired up. He goes, "F you, I'm in the sky."
So, the great thing about this movie was the fact that, you know, you had this team up of Downey Jr. and Gibson. And this was really before either one of them started having real serious problems. And they both have had their share of demons throughout their careers. But I think what a lot of people, this movie did not do well in the box office, even its worldwide total did not actually gross what the actual budget of this film was. And I think the problem with it was a lot of people felt a little disappointed they didn't get more out of the pairing of Gibson and Downey Jr., which in ways I can understand. It felt like you should have gotten more from those two, even though I do think they actually had some pretty good chemistry between them.
I thought they were really good. And what we saw there on screen was quite good. And obviously they like working together. You can see there's a charisma. But it was also with the team behind them. Obviously you had, David Marshall Green, who was one of the pilots, actually, surprisingly enough, from Bat 2-1. Of course, Bat 2-1, the true story about Eugene Hambleton, I think it was colonel of a reconnaissance plane that gets shot down in Vietnam, and David played one of the pilots that had to try and get him out, and of course his code name was Bat Tu Wong. This is Bird Dog. Do you copy? That was what they used to say on that one. We've got Lane Smith, obviously, too, character actor in there. But the big one, the big kahuna, is Art LaFleur, of course, from Future Cop, or better known as Trancers. Trancers is a great film from Joller's Band. And, of course, along with him, his little pal, Tim Thomerson, playing Bubbo. What do you reckon?
I really actually enjoyed Tim Thomerson in this film. Tim Thomerson kind of has a little bit of that, of what we call the Joy Pants Award, as I'm going to reference from another podcast, referencing Joe Pantoliano, who, you know, he's kind of that guy. You always recognize him, even though sometimes you forget his name. Thomerson did a lot of that in the 80s with a lot of B-movies and a lot of, like, secondary characters in some A-list films as well, so... Yeah, and he's just got that distinct voice and face, and I thought he was actually great in this film. Really, that's the thing with this film. You have your three big stars in Gibson, Downey, and Nancy Travis, and Nancy Travis wasn't that big at this point. But you have so many...
she's done TV with
it. Yeah, you had so many great character actors. The late Lane Smith is one of my all-time favorites.
He's so good. And then we've got... what was his biggest role here in the U.S.?
Lane Smith... I'm looking at his IMDb right now. I would lean towards My Cousin Vinny, but he was also Perry White.
Lawson Clark.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. It was Perry White in Lois and Clark: The New Adventures of Superman. But he was also in Red Dawn.
Certainly was. And of course, next to him is Ned Eisenberg, who was famous for playing Strozzi, Fredo Strozzi, in Last Man Standing with Bruce Willis.
Yes, yeah, so you also had Marshall Bell in this film. And
he's
been around. He was Mr. LaChance in Stand By Me. He was General Owen in Starship Troopers. So he's made his runs through the fandom as well.
And of course, Bert Kwok playing General Lu Song. And I think what's great about it is he plays it with such reverent character. You know, comes in. General Lu Song is kind of like, I suppose, knows everything that's going on behind the scenes. Pretty much the head of what's going on as far as like the drugs and stuff like that is coming in and out of Laos. So he plays it up, especially when we see, Lane Smith's character come in as the senator, you know, to try and find out what is really going on with Air America. Very well played.
Yeah, no, like I said, that's the thing I very much like about this movie is it's a strong cast, and they all put in really fun performances.
No, they're great. They're great. Now, folks, obviously this film came out, and, you know, it is based on, obviously there was a real Air America out there. Doing sorties into Laos and stuff like that. But, of course, a lot of it's top secret. So one of the interesting things is Mel Gibson talks about Air America in Lethal Weapon.
Yeah. Now, see, I think one of the things with this movie, though, too, I mean, yes, everything with Air America, I mean, it stretched the facts some, but that was a thing. I think one of the problems for this movie, too, Adam, at the time, was people were starting to have Vietnam film burnout.
Mm-hmm.
By the 90s, people were like, okay, we're kind of done with this. You had had Platoon, you had had Full Metal Jacket, you had had Good Morning Vietnam in 87. By 90, it was probably kind of missed the boat on the Vietnam issue.
It did, didn't it? It was a little bit late.
Born on the 4th of July kind of waited a little bit long enough before it hit, and it got a lot of people. But in this case, I think that was one of the biggest problems, is people were just sick of Vietnam films at this point.
And the thing is, like, Tour of Duty, obviously, you know, and China Beach, you know, these big TV shows based around Vietnam kind of soaked it all up, didn't it?
Oh, very much so. And that didn't help.
No, that's right. Now, folks, a couple of big things about the film. So Robert Downey Jr. has a scene in the film where he's on a rope flying across the skies of Thailand. Because you can definitely tell by the sculptures and temples and stuff like that. And believe it or not, it was done for real with Downey performing the stunt.
Yeah, there's some interesting stunt work in this and some amazing piloting in this film.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we must have really hired some damn good pilots for this.
Well, one of the ones I always liked was earlier in the film when they crashed the big cargo plane, and then later in the film when they're trying to set up Billy and Tim Thomason's character, and he crashes the Cessna inside the crash wreckage of the C-130.
It was really clever. And apparently there's some really interesting like little bits of trivia about Pepsi. One of the filmmakers to use a fictional drink, a fictional soda, rather than showing opium being refined at their abandoned factory. So when the producers had a line about wondering if Pepsi knew what was going on in the movie, that was why.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the other thing about this film is there's some great in-jokes, especially about, hey, we were never really here. So, you know, you have Gene, who is basically gun running for his retirement plan. And then I love at the end of the film when he has to basically give up all his weapons and his conscience gets the better of him and he saves refugees instead. But you know what? Here at Crazy Gene's used C-130s. It's like, and he's like, well, you know what? We're not really here. So this plane really doesn't exist here.
No, that's right. And then you've got the funny things like the Golden BB, which Art LaFleur goes, oh, that goddamn Golden BB. I knew that was coming. It's actually, which when Jack Neely says it is a term referring to basically where one shot can take down any plane basically from the ground. So the Golden BB is that bullet that could take you out.
Yep. And, you know, like I said, this movie had some comedy, but it had a lot of seriousness to it as well. I think for a lot of people, it tried to do too much. It needed to decide on a direction and go with it. And was it going to try to be a comedy? Was it going to try to be serious? I mean, you had the whole thing with Billy taking out like the drug plant, and within like 8 hours, it was back up and running.
Of course. And the thing is, their motto was anything, anywhere, anytime. You know, the transport company from hell, they could just do just about anything. And it was originally developed back in 1985 with Richard Rush behind the scenes as director. It was meant to be the first comedy about Vietnam, but of course, somebody really got there first. And of course, that was Australia's The Odd Angry Shot. If anyone hasn't seen this, obviously, I don't think it was shown overseas. This is the first real Vietnam film that was a comedy.
Yeah, but I think the big thing was Robin Williams stealing a lot of that thunder with Good Morning Vietnam in 87.
Vietnam, without a doubt. Obviously, there was other people considered for the role of Billy Covington. Those went to, of course, Tom Cruise, Bill Murray, Jim Belushi, and this one made a lot of sense, Kevin Costner.
Yeah, I think it was the right casting with Downey Jr., though, considering the comedy angle they were trying to go with as well in this film. I don't know if Costner could have pulled it off as well. I think Tom Cruise was too big for this film at the time. And there's something about that Downey-Gibson team up that just feels right.
Well, get this. The original team up for this, and it was on the cards before they just about to cast Kevin Costner, was Sean Connery. He was played to the role of Gene, and he was already attached to the script.
Interesting.
So it would have been like an Untouchables catch-up, basically.
Yeah, I don't see Sean Connery playing. I don't see them playing up as much of the comedy that they try to do in this with Sean Connery.
No, oh, that's right. No, without a doubt, it's not something you would expect. I mean, this is the third film where basically Mel Gibson played somebody involved or a Vietnam veteran in some way. We had obviously Lethal Weapon series, Mel Gibson playing a veteran in that one, and also We Were Soldiers, apart from this as well.
Well, and the other thing is that this is a point in time where Mel Gibson was kind of getting typecast, too. A lot of people were trying to have him play just a little bit different version of the Riggs character from Lethal Weapon.
That's right. Now, Nancy Travis was actually replacing Ally Sheedy, who was originally in the role of Corrine.
I think that was definitely the right upgrade there. I like Ally Sheedy, but she wouldn't have fit in this film.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it very much looks like Richard Rush was attached to direct the film, basically wanted to get it all together first with Kevin Costner as Billy. But Andrew Vajner was completely against the casting, so obviously the producers of the film. Obviously these are the producers that did First Blood and a lot of the Stallone pictures and a lot of Arnold stuff with Carolco.
Yeah, again, Costner just doesn't feel like a fit for this film.
No, that's right. Reportedly, it says that Mel Gibson's salary on this movie was $7 million at the time.
Well, that sounds about right for Mel. This was probably, this, like I said, this was kind of in that peak Mel area. He hadn't done Braveheart yet, but he was riding high off a Lethal Weapon, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Tim Thomason also played an Air America pilot in Volunteers back in 1985.
Now, there's a classic film.
Isn't that crazy? Looks like there was an actual TV show as well. Was film critic Leonard Maltin has noted that there was one, but it has no relation to the movie.
Well, let me put it this way. It was a Lorenzo Lamas television series. That's all you need to know.
Oh, boy. There you go. There you go. So where do we put this on the pantheon of action movie cinema with the Hallenbeck 5? Out of 5, where do you rate this?
I would give this a solid 2.5 to 3 on that, because there's not a ton of action in this film, but it's such, if nothing else, I love the chemistry between Robert Downey Jr. and Mel Gibson, and I think that's what makes this movie.
Yeah, definitely. I think so too. There's definitely something there when it comes to that. Charisma, and that's what brings me back every time I need, you know, want to watch it. And the music, folks, I really enjoyed the soundtrack on this one. You know, there's some great 60s and 70s tracks on there, and they're all good rock.
Yeah, that's the one thing about that any of that airtime of film is you have some really good music. Of course, you're gonna get a lot of Creedence and a few other things, but yeah, the music of that era is considered classic to this day.
Without a doubt. So I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5 on the Hallenbeck scale.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like I said, so I put it about that 2.5 to 3 mark, mainly because of the chemistry between Gibson and Downey Jr. But there's some great moments in this film, too. Do I think it's the best thing I've ever seen either one of them do? Not even close, but I think it's a fun movie on both of their resumes.
Without a doubt, folks. So there you have it. There you have our recommendation. Go and check out the film and enjoy. Sit back, relax, have yourself a schooner, and get in there and check out that movie. Without a doubt. So what is up next for Kyle on this very network?
We got a lot of things going on. We're cranking out a bunch of couch potato theaters. In fact, we will be coming out shortly. We just actually today, in fact, as we're recording this, we put out Tropic Thunder.
Oh, goodness. Tropic Thunder.
So continuing on with the Robert Downey Jr. in that film. Mm-hmm. Coming up, we have Con Air with a very special guest who is making his podcast return after a long absence. And I'm not going to spoil it, but let's just say there's
Davis Penn. Davis, you legend.
Nope, sorry. This is somebody a little more local to me.
Oh, nice. You know, I think we get. Oh, I think I know who it is.
Mandeville.
Nope.
Maddie Clifton.
You might be onto something there.
Hey, Maddie, a big shout out to Maddie. Maddie, we love you, buddy. You need to come on more. We need to get you out there. And I'm going to entice you with an anime podcast from 1980s. You have to come on and chat some Studio Ghibli.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He will chat some Studio Ghibli with you. But let's see. So we got a few other things coming up in our Couch Potato Theater, including the return of a co-founder for a very special CPT.
Oh, nice. Maddie, we can't wait, buddy. Welcome back, sir. You're the man.
And then let's see. Of course, we have Culture Clash, our weekly fandom podcast. Cast covering all the news and fandom and reviews and whatever crazy stuff myself and of course Mr. Kevin Reitzel can come up with. We've got a fun new segment we just started too called Versus, or as I saw let's get ready to throw down, because we are taking two elements, whether it's two actors, two directors, or maybe something else, even possibly two composers, and putting them up against each other to see how they hold up. And round one of Versus was the Scott brothers, Adam. We threw Tony Scott against Ridley Scott.
Nice. And I heard, Kevin, you've come all the way from Santa Barbara to be here.
I got an idea for a versus. It's Sean Connery, because I know you like Sean Connery, right? Right. Sean Connery, man, versus Timothy Olyphant. That's great, man, because Tim's going to win, man.
That's not a versus I would allow to happen. There's too much of a age gap there and too much of a body of work there. So
Sean would destroy Tony Olyphantino. Olyphantino does not have a stench.
Now, what happens though if you throw Connery up against Kane?
Well, you know, Kane might come in there and just, you know, shoot him in the back, you know, because that's how he does it. And Kane's able to just take over and destroy Connery, you know. But then you've got Connery over here doing his Zardosh, and Zardosh would come back and make sure that, hey, I shoot first, hey, guns, praise the gun.
Very, very Scanner-esque, I must say.
A little bit. All right, folks, check that out. And
the number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is... Please note, the new number is...
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to our other awesome shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast. For you movie fans, we have Couch Potato Theater, where we celebrate our favorite cult classic and guilty pleasure movies. We also have Time Warp. That's our fandom flashback show, where we like to look back on our favorite fandoms. For you NFL fans, we have the End Zone podcast. And of course, for you Alfred Hitchcock fans, please check out Good Evening. For you Star Trek and Orville fans, we also have the Union Federation podcast. And for you hard rock metal fans, we have Hair Metal, the 1980s rock metal podcast. Doctor Who fans, we've got one for you as well. We have Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast. If you're a fan of 1980s action films, please check out Lethal Mullet. And our newest show, we have a Star Wars podcast called What a Piece of Junk. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The FPNet can also be found on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network can also be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Please search on Facebook for Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We are also on Instagram and Twitter under Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.